Over. There's a channel 2 over. This Sunday afternoon, the 15th of August, 1971, with Rick, Debbie, Suzanne, Faye, and me. This Sunday afternoon, 15th of August, 1971. Now it's a good while over till the tape begins. This is channel 2 over. This is channel 2 over. And a continuation of the visit with Rick, Debbie, and Suzanne, this Sunday afternoon, the 15th of August, 71. Channel 2 over. And a continuation visit with Rick, Suzanne, Debbie, this Sunday afternoon, 15th of August, 71. Now, we've just been listening to a little of the tape, Miss Chitty, and we walk back in to talk about it. And you can hear the heels, you know, as they come in.
We're gonna die, you know. Well, you know, for that really be happening, how awful it'd be. I mean, I knew that when that burglar stood there in the doorway, I just knew that Jim and I were gonna be dead in about 5 minutes. Scared? You know, there's just not a word for it. Yet, 10 minutes after he was gone, I started thinking, what a ball I would have telling Ann about this.
Yeah.
Reporting it, and when I did. It, you know, it just turned the whole thing into a comedy sort of, you know? And like she can talk about her mother. She doesn't make it a comedy, though. Even very funny at all. But still, just, you know, the pain's gone.
The pain's gone, yeah.
And she can, yeah.
That's one of the things that I'm so slow in picking up these things, you know. It takes me forever. I just been at it so much, you know. Is that... I noticed in reporting, the attitude in the reporting is not what it was when you experienced it.
Often it's exactly the opposite.
Yeah, just like Suzanne said.
I think you're like controlling the experience then.
Yeah.
Reporting really maybe not what happened, but what you wanted to happen, what you thought.
No, you report what happened.
Yeah, but if you change the attitude.
Well, you're just changing the attitude, you're not changing what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, but can you separate the
two? No, you can't separate.
Okay, I mean, the fear of being robbed, I think that's very important.
Yeah.
As part of the experience.
Well, sure, I'm just now getting over it. Jim and I still keep our door locked with a shotgun by the bed. But I'm just now getting so I can sleep all night long without waking up 20 times and listening. But still, when I talk about it to somebody, it's lighthearted.
Yeah.
You know?
And you have to take that into account when
yeah.
people relate things to
sure.
you.
Sure.
That's right. But now, let me tell you, this is what I had in mind. You see, your printer with the. With his sky blue suit, that's not the color. He never speaks for himself.
What do you mean?
That Chitty speaks for herself.
Oh, I see.
And it seems to me like somehow along the line, you have to get manipulated. You know, that's the word I use. Somehow the line, you've got to manipulate it to the point where they can talk.
Yes, because our relationship with him was like you were talking about the people that work with Cookie can never really
right.
know Cookie. Well, we couldn't really know the printer in that way because we were working with him on a business basis, and he wanted our business. He didn't want to know us personally. He just wanted our business.
Yeah.
know, he would, on Valentine's Day, used to bring us a 5-pound heart of candy because he thought that this would, you know, make us think favorably about giving him business. And the only time, well, I guess I told you the last time I was out, the only time I really talked to him about his life, other than when he went to New York or the Dude Ranch or something, you know, he was just making conversation with that, was his description of an Italian Thanksgiving dinner. Just incredible. He came in after Thanksgiving, and we had just, it was the first winter I was up there, and we'd made Thanksgiving dinner, and I'd never cooked a turkey before, and so I was telling him that I'd cooked a turkey. And he started describing the dinner that his mother cooked. Well, they started with lasagna and spaghetti and manicotti, and, you know, these are the appetizers. Then they had turkey and stuffing and everything else, you know, and he ended up by saying, "I always gain a little weight at Thanksgiving." I thought, I'd be in the hospital. You know, I think it's hard to get beyond, if you have a business relationship with someone, it's hard to get beyond that. He didn't want to get beyond that with us. So it was hard to let him speak for himself.
Well, I'm just holding on.
Well, Mr. Eastman, being a business relationship doesn't bother him, because he come right on in. Or, I guess the reason I thought of him, I just listened to part of a tape where he painted a woman's fence, a picket fence. And I guess he was sitting in here talking about it. And he said, Lois Dickinson was crying. Nobody would do her fence. Nobody would paint it for her, scrape it, or anything, you know. And here was this fence built in when,
1900.
And
that's what you saw.
Yeah, the picket fence at Macintosh.
And nobody would help her with it. And Mr. Eastman comes over and puts his arm around her and says, "I'll do your fence."
Lois, old dear.
Old dear, I'll do your fence. He says, I'm not sure. He says, "Geezer," he says, "I thought that'd be a day job." He said, "Took me 2 weeks to do that fence." You know? And, you know, he knows Lois. And he says, "Now, I don't." He says, "Now, don't y'all say anything to her about this, about her crying, because I think the world of Lois." And he painted her fence, and the way he said, he started out, you know, and some fella in Macintosh came by that he knew, got there looking at him working on that fence, and looks at it and says, "Every one of those boards got 4 sides, doesn't it?"
And push Thomas.
So there's Mr. Eastman, 2 weeks on that job. One fella helped him with it a while. And then he says, "You know, you think that's an easy job. You just see a fella sitting on a sawhorse painting up a picket, you know, or scraping it up." He said, "But I'd go home at night and I couldn't straighten up. I'd be so sore." You know? But when he comes in and sits down here, you know, it must have been miserable for him because he's old. And here's this job. He thought, well, he'd get it done in a day or two. It takes him a week, you know, 2 weeks. Sore back. You know, just painful. And then he can come in here and sit and just make it just as merry and lighthearted as everybody's
kind of
collapse.
Yeah. So you know, I saw through Mr. Eastman, I saw the old tradesmen, I call them, the old painters and paper hangers. I can remember now, we looked forward to them coming. We didn't dread it because they were entertaining. Of course, we carried Mr. Eastman a little further. We managed to get him loose and come in here and get a drink of water or something. And once he sits down and talks a little bit, he'll keep on. But it's the same thing he'd say out there. They were entertainers. It was assumed. All of them were. And I think they went some places to hang paper because because they like to talk to him better.
Who was it? Flora Richardson took piano lessons from Lois Dickinson. Not because she wanted music lessons. She just wanted to spend an hour with Lois Dickinson.
That's the only way she could get to her.
And she was.
Like to talk. Yeah. Now, what you do, you know, you don't say, well, in those days they like talk. Now they don't like talk. What you do, that gives you something to go by. You see, we get talk. And we don't have to go to the old people. We get one of the finest talkers was this little girl, Barbara, you see. She was 20 years old. And she could out-talk the others because she was a scholar. Brought up, you see, in Jack Long's household. And your statements won't hold up. So all you do is use them while they're fruitful. Statements in order to see, but you don't want to push them. You just touch them lightly. I know where I learned that. Mr. Duvall had a store fee. He's the mayor of Micanopy now. He was a strong Wallace man. And that fall, Suzanne came up here from around the Cape. We had this little class. And I told you about that. And I was a fresh thing. And I went over and talked to Ms. Patterson Phil, and then to Jim Gilbert, and then down there, and Morganson. And everywhere I went, they were just full of talk. And all I had was that little shoulder thing then. I was still trying to use that. Everywhere I went, they were just full of talk. Just talked. And I worked on that. I said, there's something about this talk. It's rich, you see, but I had no terminology for it. I had no way of getting a hold of it. Well, anyhow, one thing I learned, they didn't stay the thesis or ways, but they had a direction. And the thesis gets in your way. And that's the academic side, you see, that we suffer from. I'm expert to the thesis. I can state one I have none. And antagonize. Well, Mr. Morganson was the one. He was for Mr. Wallace. Oh, he laid it on. He laid it on thick. But what I came to find out was he was talking just like the others, informative in the same way. And if you made some allowance for overstatement, he was saying the same thing the rest of us were saying. And it's in there, and I call that little thing Three Studies. It's Red Dog. Compared to some of the things now. But that's where I landed. And all he was doing was writing his thesis and saying the very same thing the others were saying. And you see, that carried me through to Bassetta this last term. She had been on a strike last year that closed down the university for the before she'd been in on that, and a little bit afterwards. And the strike folded up, and she was it's just like she'd lost her footing, you see, she'd lost. And she came to find she had nothing to hold on to, and she had seen nothing. And she came out here and talked a good bit, and I studied the tape. And what it was, she had that revolutionary thesis, the establishment. Simplified everything, so she saw nothing. Thesis was too strong. And I had run across that before, you see, in World War II. I was in India, and I used to hear the Indians, the people in India talk. And they were, but everything was so simple, the English was at the root of all their troubles. And I got so tired of hearing it. And I projected back to the revolution, American Revolution, and I thought how tired the British must have got it here.
What all we always hits me, so is it mischievous talking to him? I haven't studied the tape, but I've studied one that she's made before. She has it. But she's just right out of Catherine Ann Porter. You've got to let her speak. Catherine Ann Porter has got to speak.
Yeah.
And all these things that you make so much over, Catherine Ann Porter and the rest of them, this is all it is.
Voice.
And they understand it.
Somehow or other, but it's not in the books. If it is, I can't find it. And I've been told I never recognize it. Everybody finds it out for themselves. But now, what I'm saying is, you see your exterior, somehow, I'd say, you've got to manipulate it, rig it, so people can speak for themselves. And you follow them along and don't match experiences, no chit-chat, you see. You're not patronizing, you put in words and talk every now and then, but you are the ones that project in. They don't look at you, you're looking at them, by and large. You have to project. I worked with so many people today. I picked up a lot of things. One of the things I picked up is one of the most flat-headed things in the world is to ask a person a question. People come out here, look around, and the first thing they say, how many acres have you got? And they can't resist saying, how many cows have you got?
You know, I don't even know.
Hey, you never
asked. And I don't really care how many you have.
Well, you see, a person is so addicted to asking direct questions. Well, a green light can be just handing a fellow a glass of water. That's the green light.
Debbie's just got a rich fall. Oh, she's just got it made for her up there. And she's going to be up there in New Hampshire, you know, in a place about like Evanston.
Yeah.
Got one store and one gas station. This
and
little
you're
village
not
in New
invite
Hampshire.
Anybody to tea.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to invite anybody to tea. But I'm going to work for my godmother.
Tell
just,
him about that.
Yeah, she's
rich.
My godmother's a watercolorist, and she has an art school in her barn up there, and I'm going to work for her this fall.
Oh.
And she moved into this little village. 6 years ago, and she went across the street to meet her neighbors. You know, well, you've heard people say that, you know, villages in New Hampshire and Vermont are very, you know, people don't talk very much. Well, this old woman lived across the street from my godmother, and she went across to meet her. She was out in the yard, and Phoebe had just moved in, and so she went across, and she didn't think she'd invite her over, you know, to have a drink or beer or anything like that, you know.
That's
so she said, you know, well, hello, my name's Phoebe Florey. I just moved in across the street, you know, on and on. And the woman was not saying anything, just nodding. And so Phoebe said, well, you know, how'd you like to come over and have a cup of tea? And the woman said, I don't drink tea. She didn't speak to her again for 5 years. She didn't say a word. She didn't speak to her again for 5 years. And except one day, I was up there one weekend from Boston, and we went into the store to get something. I don't know, get some butter or something. And this woman was in the store, and Phoebe went to get her mail, because the mail, it's like Evanston, the mail, the post office is in the store. She went to get her mail, and this woman said, good morning. And Phoebe came back out, and she grabbed me, and she said, what did I do? She talked to me. 5 years, she hadn't said anything. And finally, she said, good morning, and I guess they've had conversations since. I'll have to ask her when I come back if she's ever spoken to her again.
So she was imposing her culture.
Right, asking her to drink tea.
Before she found
out. Well, that's right. You just can't imagine how many reversals we had out here. I had one member of the countryside right after another, and it was all just didn't come back. One right after another. Well, up until Johnny is the first one. Faye made the dent on Johnny when he was the one that worked with Nupi. And she found out how to get him to work. didn't tell him to come. I asked him to come or something.
It was always his decision.
His decision.
And I never paid him. I paid him at the end of each time he came. And he never said, I'll be back tomorrow. I never said, will you be back tomorrow?
Never tied him down.
He could have Nupi standing perfectly still. And without anything that I could see that he did, Nupi would go into a loop. Or I couldn't get Nupi into a loop without working on her. And one day I couldn't stand it
without anymore. A tube before.
That's right. One day, and you all appreciate this. So one day I just couldn't stand it any longer. And I said to Johnny, Johnny's been riding Nupi all summer. Please tell me how you make her go into a loop. And he looked at me and he said, I'm not a teacher. And he wasn't about to give away the one thing he had. I paid him all summer. This
paid him cigarette
thing.
Money.
This was his thing. And so this was, I never, you know.
Yeah. But she found out that was a toll bull. Mm-hmm. That was toll bull. That's the first I knew that I had been a damn fool.
This is a small thing, but you all will understand, and you all know, because the house in town, you know, I guess I've got a dozen match sets of dishes. I've got three out here. And I've got lovely, nice, country dishes. But when these our friends come in, I never try to match them. They don't have it at their house. I just, you know, this is the way it is. If I did it the other way,
hey, what do you think?
It's just that small.
Yeah, very, very small.
God drinks out of a fruit jar. Some of them do.
Yeah. Well.
That's
fine. I don't know that helps. I tell you.
Oh, that feels so sorry for me.
Yeah.
If you don't want to cut the grass for yourself, why don't you cut it for yourself?
They do. Even
yeah.
Phil. Phil
yeah.
Passed
Frankie.
Me.
Frankie came over here and
yeah.
Wondered why you didn't cut this grass. Yeah.
Do they never belong to a woman in this society? They have no feeling for Barney.
No highlights.
They don't want any Barney. What would they think if they knew a possum came on our porch and visited us every night?
Yeah. Willie told that skunk story. It's on tape. And I could decide the skunk.
Uh-oh.
And he, that's all right with him then. But, by and large, you take the, you go along with him. There's no, Rick, we were talking about, They want things plumb and square.
Mm-hmm.
And Willie talks about that big shed he has out there. He says it's 1/2 inch all square. Well, I showed him mine out there, and it's about 8 inches.
Are you think they feel sorry for us.
Yeah. And you see, what some things you can't take a chance with. You got to, like if we're out there, it bewildered me when I found that he didn't want a bale of hay unless it was square.
Even though his horse calf was tired.
It didn't matter what shape the thing was. He didn't want them figured, you see. And some things they don't have a sense of humor. And you gotta say, well, this damned old machine, I simply can't make it square than bale. That's the, you've got to do, you ought to do that and not take a chance. You can't quit him. If you do, it'll build up in him.
Yeah.
And I can't, to save me, sometimes, you know, I want to spank the horse on the rump, and I sometimes can't resist.
Depends on what you want to see. It's not being
No.
It depends on what you want.
You're the one that projects.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's it.
You just go along with them. I mean,
yeah.
I've had the awfulest time with my mother. She's finally learned. Mother you know, she lives in a city and air conditioned, and her, they fly her down in Don's plane, and, you know, she didn't think anything about it. And I said, Mother, you don't say that Don brings you down in her, his plane. These people, just, you just don't. And finally, she's learned. You know, she's got a little, some little categories, and she's 87, and she's got some categories that she can hold her. And she can rest. She's done real well. Not, you know, letting them speak.
Wow, that is really delicate.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, you can go through life and never know what a stupid remark you make.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, you know, like yesterday, and I had a pair of jeans on there, bell-bottom jeans. And was that Mr. Eastman that was working on the porch?
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed right away he looked down at my pants. And I knew he was looking at those belts, and I shouldn't be wearing them.
That's right.
Nick came.
That's right.
One little thing. Nick came, and he thought maybe he'd help this country fellow work in the watermelon.
Mm-hmm.
And he wears boots, cowboy boots,
mm-hmm.
and tight jeans, you know. And he went down and spoke to this fellow about working for helping with the watermelons, and he said, "All right, but you'll never get me wearing them clothes."
They're boots of the wrong sort, or they got a high heel or something.
Yeah, he was wearing cowboy boots. You don't wear no watermelons in cowboy boots.
Yeah, he had just flat boots.
Full buckle boots.
Hmm.
And he didn't want any city dude out in his watermelon.
And
they
want to run around.
And I slipped up on that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not all that violent, but I mean, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of little things to watch.
So that, you see, when you figure how much farther along you've been than most of the people you work with, you've got to make some concessions.
Yeah, and be willing to accept the static you're going to get from your friends about them.
I was thinking about you go to cafeteria and the talk isn't abstract like you're accustomed to. They talking about stacking something on the shelf 8, whatever you said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, you go along with it. You mean all that on the shelf 8? Some way of going along. You see, open it up and go along with them.
Mm-hmm.
Let them go that direction.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, I don't know. You see, I'm not urban.
But there's any situation, anything you can do it this way. It just has to be.
But most of the world's urban now, so you see, you can't
mm-hmm.
Can't gear yourself to.
Well, out here, this is what I found. They like to talk, you know, and if you just give them. You know, to say, or look interested or something. That's just cool.
But now, that probably wouldn't happen.
Yeah, it's pretty harsh.
Yesterday, when I went over to Newberry, now this is Jim's Uncle Eddie and his Aunt Moselle. They're about as distantly related to me as anybody could be. He's Jim's grandfather's sister. Yeah, well, that's
all right.
You know? I drive up to the house, and she comes out, and we go in and sit down and watch the last 20 minutes of a wrestling match. Then they come over, and they show me all these pictures, horses that he's trained, colts and fillies, trained them to lie down and do tricks, and he can sit on their rump, and, you know, and he knows...
You mean Uncle Eddie?
Uncle Eddie. He shows me all these pictures, you know, because he knows Jim and I have a horse, and we like horses. Aunt Moselle was just fidgeting back and forth, one foot to the other. She wanted to show me the house. So as soon as Uncle Eddie got through the pictures, she showed me the house. Her cabinets that he'd made for, you know, and all the woodwork that he'd redone, the furniture they'd redone, the new stuff, the antiquing, the trunk that had been his aunt, from the time he was 2 years old, he could remember it sitting in his room, in her room. Every room in the house, the furniture, when they got it, when they'd redone it, you know, pictures, how they remodeled. They got through the house, you know, all the time talking about their relatives and things that were going on and when they built the house. Uncle Eddie, of course, built it himself to tongue and groove woodwork, you know, and sheetrock, and three ceilings, you know, just, since we got through the house, he put on his hat, one of these old gray, kind of soft brim felt hats, and off we went. we drove all over Newberry and all over that country around there. All three of us in the front seat. And he just took off. He knew where he's going. We went down the lane and we went past Lynch Hammock. And he told me about the time they'd lynched four blacks there one night. All that story. About the phosphate mines, about the Cummer Company, and just all around the lime pits. The Swedish families Mr. Cummer had brought over from Sweden to do his woodwork. And they're still there, you know. All around, then back into Newberry, around the Color District, the new housing project. Back by his old school, the old ice house, the man's house, you own the ice house, the dairy, the new high school, just everything, you know, and pointing out this house, you know, this fella earned the dairy, lived there till the dairy went out of business. And back to his ranch, and then he said, well, let's go on and I'll show you those colts I showed you the pictures of. So we drove on down and looked at them. He talked to them, you know, and they came up to the fence. And on around to where the old farm used to be, his father and grandfather, and all around all his property, and just talking all the time. Aunt Moselle would have a story to tell, and then Uncle Eddie'd have a story to tell, and then Aunt Moselle and Uncle Eddie, and all these relatives kind of, you know, just floating around the car. And he knows everybody in that whole countryside. His family has lived there. His great-grandfather was born in 1812, I think, and they've always lived in Newberry, or they're right around there. He says he can remember, well, he knows people, older people there since the time he was a baby, and some of them still alive. He said, if you don't know the way to my house when you get to Newberry, just ask for Eddie Smith. Sure enough. First person I asked. Well, he lives right down the road, about 2 miles. Take a grade road between the pine trees, and there you are. They know him. You know? And he showed me his ranch, and we finally got back to the house. He showed me the tobacco barn, and the new pine trees. And then we went in the kitchen, ate peanuts, and drank Coke, and he talked about cattle. Of course, you know, none of it was, you know, a sustained thing because we're moving, you know, driving. Each turn in the road would bring up something else. And they're just packing my head with the family history all in one visit, you know. And, of course, I couldn't follow all of it.
Like he's
got 9 brothers and 2 sisters, and he's the oldest one.
You got it pretty well. Yeah.
But all I did, you know, is just, the first time we met him was at the family reunion about 2 weeks ago. And they said, come on over. Anytime. So I thought, well, Jim can't go yet. So I'll just drop over and stay a couple of hours. Call him up. Sure, come on over. And now we're invited back for supper Tuesday, and we've made him firm, fast friends. They were so delighted to show me around, you know, just, this was Newberry, it was their Newberry, they knew things, and they just wanted me to know them too, with the room, all over the place, crisscross back and forth,
yeah.
I gotta tell you, if you ever run out of people over here, just move over there, because Uncle Eddie, he's born in 1903, so he's
just mellow.
Yeah, and in good health, and alert, and talks, and Aunt Moselle, of course, too. He's got a little trouble with arthritis, that's why he gave up the cattle and the horses. But my Lord,
he don't really have to travel far, do
you? Now, you see, you can just do that and nothing else for
When I left, they said, come back and spend the day. And they mean it. Just like Miss Guthrie over there, spend the whole day. They wouldn't get tired.
No.
Of course, you know, it's not like having your kitchen, you know, and being able to invite them in and sit them down and get them to talk. Because, it gets you know, you have little things coming in between, like wrestling and things like that. But still,
it takes a lot of raw talk before you're ready for shave.
Mm-hmm.
I find if you explore on tape, it's tedious.
Mm-hmm. It's too focused.
You have to know a good bit, and then, well, anyhow, that's nice. Well, you see, that's you got to work. Well, now, you see, you don't have Uncle Eddie, and it's not open country like Newberry, but something will open up.
Yeah. Harder in those urban areas.
But where? I don't think it is.
It's time. They don't want sitting
time. I think they do.
May have to be midnight.
After business hours are over.
I don't know. Rick, I don't know. But anyhow, they've got to speak for themselves.
Gosh, Don, I think anybody, if you give them half a chance, well, almost anybody, if you just give them half a chance, they like to talk.
Yeah, just,
you know? I mean, like, what do we look forward to when we come out the ranch and sitting on this table and talking? I do. You know, it's just knowing that you got somebody who's going
to listen. Learn how to listen. I found that. I can just figure out what it is that makes that person realize that I'm listening.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I think so. Now that's all in Ratliff, you know. Except a great deal more in Ratliff. There's a direction you see in Ratliff. That first thing about the barn burner, who is that, Ed? And Rana asked him, and you got two little sections there. One of them is Rana, and the other is sitting over on the store, on the bookshelf, just after dark. Now, what he does there, what I think, in a way, what he does there, it's sort of a parallel to Marlowe on the ship in Lord Zim. He relates that. Oh, it's not Lord Zim, it's the other one.
Harder
to Harder.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He relates it after dark. But it's rapid. And he gives one remarkable narrative after another. And part of it, he touches it so lightly. He looks at Ab, you see, in his better days. And he was 8 years old. And he led a horse's two to him.
Yeah.
And he'd sit on the fence and watch the people come from all around to see what Ab had got in his stable. Even so, you see, what he's doing, dipping back, just like this city. He don't know the generation he's talking to. And you see, all this idea, you see, all this business about remembering and memory, you see, is academic. It's from the school. The schools don't know. And it comes out in the talk. You don't remember the experiences. They just come to you. Bill Burgess, he sees the evil taking over. He says, come on, let's see what the mind will do. If you let it, you see. See what you get in the way. Ask questions. Now that little green light is one of the most extraordinary things I ever saw. It's such a small thing. It's almost a twinkle.
And it's almost as easy to cut off the green light by some small thing.
Well, you know, there are a lot of little things. You don't want to direct it. You don't want to impose direction on them. You see, you don't want it on you. But you do want it. You can't keep from it. You know, you just have to watch and watch and watch. Not to impose direction. And make them give information that doesn't come. Like that little case I picked up from Sage. See, I picked it up for myself the same way. She says, what they're made of. Well, she ought to say it's hard to pull that thing out of money.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go along with it and wouldn't impose the direction on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I picked out, you see, the crime. I picked out most of it, actually, to go into, but she didn't know it. He said, "The old house might fall down." I said, "Well, Miss City, that's the trouble with houses. All of them, you see." And that opened it up. That was a green light.
Yeah, because she might have just stopped with the old house falling down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But she couldn't cry. That was something. But I had no idea. And then she carries on 2 matches at once. She had to quit school on account of it. So she gives a second chance to the teacher. She was older than the teacher. And she stopped when she was sixth grade. But she kept those books. Rosalie could use them, she told her daddy. And all just as circumstantially. Yes. Now you see you have got to figure that your professors don't know these things. That the people who write literature, most of them don't know those things. Flannery O'Connor, well, that was great gifts of hers, went to the Iowa School of Letters. She could use her experience, but she intellectualized them. The way you couldn't actually see the experience. And she has all those awkward intellectualized things, you see. I put my mind on that last year. She has that what's the name of the book?
Violent, yes.
Now what she does is take that from Matthew or something. And I use a little commentary, a nice little thing that the man wrote for. And he said most people misunderstood him. And after he got through it, I had no idea what he meant. I had no idea what Matthew meant. It's one of the difficult things. You see, they'll pick out those cruxes, those passages that are unintelligible, that nobody ever knew what they meant. The violent bad way. You see, if the fellow that said it, if he knew it, he's one of the few. Nobody since then knows. It simply doesn't admit the intellect. It understands. You know, you're kidding yourself. The only thing I know is I have got to the point I know when I don't understand what the hell they're talking about. And I don't kid myself and say, well, I'm pretty smart too. I can understand it. See, I got past that. I found out long ago I didn't have very good sense and there wasn't any use kidding myself. And I found when I quit kidding myself, I could see it a whole lot better. You know. That's the trouble of being bright. See, all of you are bright. You go on a cloud. You see, you can't keep from it.
You're too bright.
You see? You're dazzled with your mentality and your insights. And once you have an insight, you better say, I'll take this a little ways and I'll discard it. Because if nothing's right, you see. Nothing's right, nothing's wrong. All knowledge, you see, is part of the senses, and the senses are fallible, and there's no right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There's no yes or no. You or anyone else in this world and the other, we don't know. So all you want is that beautiful glimpse, such as Miss Chitty says. Aren't they beautiful? Just so small.
Oh, goodness, I wish we could go on and on, and I'm going to play my favorite, Miss Daisy. Oh, you could see her sitting right there, just about this tall.
Yes.
So unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm going to put some hot water on for Rick and send him to Miami.
Because
he has to work tomorrow. He has to go.
We've never had anyone report like Miss Daisy.
Never.
And she is as unprepossessing.
She's the only one that I can sit all day long and listen to and never come.
Oh, yeah? I think she was down here once. She was talking about the roses, seven sister roses. Maybe they can see.
Yes.
Bethany?
No, that's not Daisy.
All the way to Miami in the rain. All the way out in the rain, keeps
him awake. Well, you want to take? I've got your sandwiches fixed.
I think I'm
ready. Okay.
Well, he doesn't eat, Faye.
You've got to
run.
I've got to run. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it. And I'll see you soon, okay?
Okay, give us a ring. I'll be in town tomorrow, but from then on, I think I'll be out here. Okay.
You're going to be there all day.
All afternoon.
Well, you're going to be there all afternoon, Faye. They close shop there early.
Well, call me.
I will. I'll call. I may be around longer than I was planning to leave next week, but I'll probably be here longer than that.
Good.
That's good. Ben's been through with me.
Good. We're not through with you either.
That's good.
Allison can be christened without you.
Allison can be christened without me. Babies get christened all the time. My niece is getting christened, and I was going to go up to the christening next weekend, but I don't think I'm going to go.
She ought to make a tape while she's here.
This stuff is out of commission right now.
You make tape up somebody.
Oh, I thought you wanted me to make a tape. I thought you make a tape of Cookie. We did the other night.
Yeah.
That was
if Cookie goes to that dance Saturday night, maybe you might get something.
Well, he was saying when he left.
You
talk about
those
dancing all night.
You see, you say, well, you're going to get some new blood and all like that, but a new audience makes some new recording, same people.
We're
going to
have a bite.
Barbara saw that, you know, that the audience makes a difference a lot.
Big difference.
You kind of shape the story or whatever you're telling.
Yeah, and you look at it in a different way. Rick, let me tell you, you just bring your daddy up. Just get him in the car to go around to the booth back and don't stop.
Remember last summer when you came out to eat for the first time, I had some of those pears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're on again for you.
Now he
is. Bye, David. We'll be missing you.
Okay.
We'll think about you while you're gone.
Well, get us a customer now.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'll fix it for you. You need some coffee. Or what do you want, Rick? Glass of milk?
Water. Glass of milk. Good.
And you don't want to talk to him, you know, too confidentially, you know, about what we do. But
I don't know if he wants coffee. I see.
But just know
he's suspicious.
Don't talk to anybody you know about the machinery that we use. I mean, that'll get out, that'll run. Well, you have to talk. If I have to talk in here, we can talk out in the stable.
Which is your glass here? Do you know?
Doesn't really matter. It's
rinsed out. But see, he could open up all these things. You see the directions where you get information and all like that.
Mm-hmm.
What all he got.
He talks to me a lot about it. I don't understand it. He just tells me all they're doing. But it's all in the terms of the business, you know.
Yeah.
How they close out an account and all this. Well, I don't understand that.
Yeah.
But I just keep, you know, nodding my head.
Yeah. Well, you hear that, Faye? You see, he got his daddy there, and he'll learn to talk to him someday. It's awful hard to talk to your own family.
Mm-hmm. Because it's a different relationship. You're on a different level.
Yeah.
Now, he can talk about business, and he can talk about people.
Yeah.
I mean, see, people are his job.
Yeah.
I mean, he's head of that department.
Oh, is he?
But he tells me, he says, Rick, I don't know how to do half the work we do anymore. He says, I just keep people off everybody's back. That's all mostly what he does. He just keep people from arguing with each other.
Yeah. How about that?
Well, it's remarkable. The insight he has in human nature. I never realized it.
Yeah.
He picked up quite a bit of wisdom.
Yeah.
You just say one little thing and I'll say, wow. You really got a point there.
And he gives you the experiences. I don't care too much for the wisdom.
No,
the
no.
Experiences.
Not too much experiences.
He got
him.
You just go after
him. It's hard to get
him
out of him. He's
pretty
quiet about him. No, not too many people I think he talks to on a personal experience level. We're talking about business, but that's kind of disconnected now.
Yeah.
From the person.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about machine.
Yeah. Suzanne keeps these little things rolled up here where she's right by her. How many
have
you eaten?
I have them out on the table.
How many have you eaten the last 2 days?
Well, I ate a whole pack of these yesterday. And then I've been eating them since I got here. I know.
It's a good reason to eat them.
She's a vegetable girl, too. She doesn't know it. Who's your uncle in...
Uncle Eddie.
Tampa?
Oh, in Tampa? That's my grandfather in Tampa.
Yeah.
Not my grandfather. Jim's grandfather.
He's the vegetable man.
He's a garden, you know.
Yeah.
Blackberries. And what they don't like, tame blackberries. So they get wild blackberries and mix them in the garden. That way they get big ones and sweet ones.
Yeah. Now, is he cagey around the university people, your daddy?
I think he's kind of competing.
Huh?
You know, I find it's the people that didn't go to college that...
Well, you see, I wouldn't compete with him.
Yeah, but if he knows you're a professor, he would, you know, he'd be maybe leery of that fact.
But you see, I won't compete with him.
He may go ahead and compete anyway.
Yeah.
I found in my job. I
you
never try and bring up my education. I try and hide it.
Yeah.
But then they'll always come out and say, well, of course, you college boys have really got opportunities open to you. And I go,
well, you gotta get some way. I like Ratliff, who Faulkner talks about that comic mask he wears. And he calls it that because he doesn't know what it is himself, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something that's disarming. and it's like I think it's like the old salesman, car salesman, say they wouldn't put it on the dotted line. Are you gonna buy it or not? You see, they'll get it out there, yes, but they'll keep talking through it, so you won't have a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta keep. You see, you can run through those things. Just talk through it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to do it. See, I can't do it. I can do it with the people I know, but just certain ones.
Now, you see, now that's why I like to work with Manny, because he knows how to do it. A salesman?
Yes.
Well, like, you're putting up soap, maybe you give 3 rows to somebody and you give 6 to your own product. And they say, well, we don't like this. Well, man, just starts right in and tells them, well, no, this is a good idea, and just explains it. And I could see, you know, they could get an argument real fast.
Yeah.
But Manny takes over, and when he finishes, the guy's going, well, you know, maybe you're right there.
Yeah.
And I just sit and watch him, and how do you do it, Manny?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you might never get to it, might never, you know, have that touch, but you can.
Yeah, he's got quite a touch.
Find your own. Now, a lot of ways, if you've got someone to sort of spearhead it for you, if he can lead the way for you, see, that's another way.
Mm-hmm.
Open it up for you. Once it's opened up, you're all right. Once the gate's open.
Yeah. Well, that's what I like to work with.
I've had a few people in my life, I could always tell. If I meet somebody else, I could always tell when they had spoken to them about me, because they took me right in. Just a few people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed like any time they mentioned me, I had an open gate from that one. Anyway, I couldn't do it myself. Well, you say it's all complicated. It's not complicated. It's just a matter of, you know, just working it out. And what you get is worth so much. You don't go through.
You don't want to go back to school, that's for sure.
I'm glad to hear that.
You want the bread. Just plain bread.
No. That's so much to learn outside of school. And it just gets in your way, so I'm terrible. That's one thing. You keep thinking, well, I might want to go back to school, so don't tie down here, don't tie down there. And then I realize, well, don't need to, really. You just start working, and you can really get a lot done.
Looking.
You don't need somebody to say, well, it's official, you can do it now.
Yeah.
Well, how you think Rick ought to do, Faye? How are we going to sort of keep in touch with him? He don't type much.
He don't have to use his typewriter.
He's learning.
Tell us.
Uh-huh.
He don't have to report.
Well, you never type much.
I'm learning. I know how to type. I've been practicing in the evening.
Practice typing?
Yeah, because I type pretty slow, you know.
I never practiced. I don't know. I just.
You know, it's something if you
well,
know
if I
somebody,
didn't, you wouldn't be able to read what I wrote.
You know, if there's somebody somewhere that's interested in what you found out, what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's just a, you know, it's
well, I'm
not
start.
Everybody cares.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you better get your. I don't believe there's any substitute for typing.
That's
you
what I'm
can
trying
see it
to
much better yourself, and then you can pass it on a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's always so surprising when you start out. You think, well, I really don't have anything to say. You go along, and, you know.
You ever had it where, wow, I've got a lot to say, and you start writing, and then there's just nothing there.
Yeah.
Well, I run, you know, like I would want to have a lot to say, and then I start typing, and think, well, it's going to take me forever to, you know, get this down, and so I just kind of peter out in the middle of it.
I have it, and it gets going, and all of a sudden it just starts going here.
Well,
go
yeah,
there,
sometimes.
And I can't, well, now what was I going to say? And I say, well, don't worry about it. Let's see where it goes.
Yeah. That's a more satisfactory experience, isn't it? When it gets out of hand.
Yeah.
When it boils down, it's this.
Keep meaning to keep a record of what's going on, but things have been tied up at home because a friend of mine's father's in the hospital, so I've been driving them around a lot. And before I know it, the evening's gone. But I think things are gonna settle down pretty soon.
How about the microphone?
That's enough for now.
Okay, the sound is good.
Well. I don't know, Suzanne. Half a day at the typewriter is my recipe.
If you haven't got half a day, you just have to put in a little bit. Whatever you can put in.
I get off.
Put in all that if I had the endurance.
Now, you see, Suzanne, on that cattle, I visited Uncle Eddie. You can set it all down, and then you see it open up suddenly. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's certain things I can see right off it, as I hadn't realized before. They love working the cattle. They miss it when they don't have it.
Yeah.
And every time, Aunt Moselle says every time we go to town, he thinks about, you know, Gainesville. It'd be nice to have a couple of yearlings. And of course, you know, he's talking to me about his.
We'd like to think that this, you know, we could make this the purpose of this whole place out here. It's sort of a, you know, where we can sit around and talk.
That ain't conspicuous,
right? Yeah.
So Rick, you just 5.5 hours from us, you would just have to dip in a little more. You know.
See, the only thing is, his job will run out. Few more weeks. If I worked for him, I could get transferred, like I say, quite a few places. I could stay in Florida, or I could go to Carolina or somewhere, I don't know.
And stay with Daddy. Stay in your own family.
Finding a job is getting kind of hairy.
Just pay them to work.
Is all you going to eat?
Yeah, that's nothing.
Okay, he's got to.
Yes. We are trying to help you off, and here we are hindered.
I'm kind of reluctant to leave.
We're out there.
What's that?
Got a long drive.
That's
coffee and your sandwich.
Coffee.
No.
I think there's two left.
I'm too busy turning on the windshield wipers and changing the radio stations and all.
Well, check in with us when you come back out.
Okay.
You hear that?
It's a
weekend.
Hey. All right. You watch the weather, man, and if the sun is shining, we'll have it down. Section. I sure wish there's some way we could.
Yeah, I know. I just realized there's only about 2 weeks left this summer. And then I go to Georgia, which, of course, man, I'm not sure we're going anymore.
I think Uncle Eddie has more of the outlook that you need than the Georgia.
I think, you know, I go up to Georgia and
I don't know anybody up there.
Of course, you know, you get to know them, but it's just starting from scratch. You have somebody like Uncle Eddie. They know people and they can give you, you know, the things to go on.
There.
And
yeah.
Then you can,
wouldn't that be
marvelous? Yeah. You know, just.
And Uncle Eddie say, open things up.
Yeah. I think he's really taught. Now, you know, like I said, there wasn't much, you know, sustained talk.
Yes.
Because there was too much showing me everything.
Yes. He has never had a chance for sustained talk.
Oh, I expect he has. It's just that yesterday, you know, I wasn't there that long, and we were driving around. And Aunt Moselle was talking, too. But I think he'd sit down and talk.
He's never had a chance to.
I don't know if he hasn't.
Well, that's a statement, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you a thing. I'm just making a statement. You could find out. One way or another.
He'd go spend a day over there. No kidding. I just spend the day. You know, I used to think, well, people just say that, you know, to be polite. They don't want you to come and sit there looking for
a long time. Do you realize how far you have come from these two?
No.
Oh, you
my
do,
reporting still seems pretty juvenile.
Oh, you
sometimes
do, too.
Well.